Hey everybody, this is Open Mic. I had to consciously think that time to not do the hey 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 noise to open up the podcast with. So you guys let me know if that bothered you or not. Maybe you guys even noticed it. That's just my insane insecurity. No wrong answer here. So, while making this podcast at the last second, as I normally do, to shuttle to Leslie and have her rifle through my garbage and make it somewhat presentable, she does an amazing job at, complaint-free. She's a saint. Should be treated as such. I somehow deleted, permanently, maybe 70% of the Keel Renan podcast. The Keel Renan podcast was supposed to be just Keel. As I set up at Keel's house, came over, ended up being an amazing podcast. I could be totally lying to you guys. Like, House never showed up. It was a horrible podcast. And Keel Renan's a total jerk. All of you know that this isn't true. And maybe in the future I'll find it, you know, and we'll get that extra bit. I'll get that extra bit to you, but for now I only have like 30% of it, which is, I feel really bad. I feel really bad for Keel taking the time out to do that, House for jumping in real quick, and now it's gone. So this will be a pretty short podcast. I feel like it'd be disrespectful altogether just to not put up any audio. So I'll run with what I have, but in the meantime, accept my apologies. I've also found out that if I just leave the music playing in the background, I can have a lot more awkward pauses, and you know, like that wasn't as awkward, right? So. I'm going to try to make this podcast the intro a little longer than normal. Do my best Bill Burr imitation and try to rant a little bit. I mean, not rant. Rant's like if you have an idea or if you have like a philosophy on something. Ranting, I think, should be reserved for people with genuine, well-thought-out ideas, dogmas, philosophies, and I think I'm just talking. I don't know, maybe vomiting. I asked people to send me a couple Twitter questions. We'll see. How's it going with me? Nobody asked. Well, thank you for asking, nobody. It's okay. I think as I said before, trying to focus next year with the team. Cycling, it's hard, right? Like, you come out this year with this team that I don't think, let's be fair, like, not a lot of people expect much out of. I knew how good the team was, but I was right up close to it. And now you come out and you beat all expectations. I mean, fucking hell, guys. Like, the national champion, NRC champion, UCI America's Tour, team and individual, yellow jersey in a medalist race. I mean, come on, you know, like, won Winston, had the old jersey for a while at Redlands, we won Saguenay, ran second at Tour de Beauce. I'm sure there's other results I'm forgetting, you know, and, but, I mean, above all, I mean, we took first and second at the national championships. It's kind of ridiculous, right? Like, when you think about it, like, that's not... It's not normal. Like, that doesn't happen, you know? Like, And we did it. Like, and we'll probably never do it again. Like, I think it's safe bet. Like, I'll never be on a team that gets first and second in the National Road Race ever again. But, like, it happened. I had my first time out. So, like, how do you not, like, adjust your expectations to, like, be disappointed if you don't get first and second in the national championships? Like, how do you have that kind of, like, that same energy and that same, I mean, like, it's a mad energy, right? Like, the things that we did to get there, you know, the amount of training and driving and everything like that that we did to make that happen on the, with one director, one Swanee, one mechanic, like, that was a logistical fuck-all, you know? And we got it done just off of sure, like, I mean, like, lean body tissue. That's what that was. And to get back to that point where you're willing to make those sacrifices and come up short again, like, how do you not immediately become disappointed, right? I think human condition is that you want all these things to come back, you know, like you want the exact same stuff, if not more. I mean, Julian Kyre, fifth place in the Road Race and Nationals, if he was like a half wheel farther ahead, we would have got first through third, you know, like, so how does this shit, like, we could, I don't know, folks. I just, you know, this is one of those things, sometimes when you complain like this, people say, first world problems, there's that hashtag, first world problems, or, you know, like, you gotta keep perspective, there's Ebola outbreak in Africa, like, fine, yeah, I get that, but, like, just because your problems are small, right, like, if they are the grand sum of your problems, they are still your problems, and it kind of fucks me off to, like, hear people just say, like, ah, well, it's small world problems, like, quit complaining. Like, I think you're still allowed to complain about your problems, aren't you? I mean, like, you don't do, like, this amplified self-pity and you don't make them other people's problems, but you're still allowed to feel. You're not some saint who just, you know, I don't think everybody's supposed to be this. I mean, even Mother Teresa must have complained about, like, how, like, she hadn't taken a shower in a couple days or something, right? Why do I think Mother Teresa didn't take a shower? I'm not sure. I assume where she was working, she didn't get a daily rinse. And her hands were really cracked. She didn't have a lot of lotion. And I'm assuming, like, you know, she didn't get, like... I mean, was Mother Teresa, like... Did she ever, like, grab her belly and be like, oof, hungry? Like, do we all have to do that much work to be able to complain about our small problems? I'm not even making sense right now, folks. I'm full of garbage. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, I have a lot to live up to. The team has a lot to live up to. We set the bar really high, and it's probably unrealistic to imagine that we're gonna pass again. Maybe by, you know, but we might. You know, like, we came really close to winning Gila with Rob Britton. I want to win Gila. I want to win the National Time Trial Championships with Huffman. I want to win the National Road Race Championships again. I want to win a Sage Medalist. And I mean, I'm going to work really, really hard for this, you know? I want to see Flavio De Luna win the Mexican National Championships. I want a Canadian National Championship on my plate. You know, I want these things. So, like, how are we going to make it happen? I don't know. But I know that we signed a team that's capable. And hopefully you guys stay fans. I was thinking about this as far as fans go. Everybody talks about, like, how romantic cycling used to be, maybe a little bit. And when I say everybody, that's just a gross, sweeping thing I'm going to say with people in my immediate circle. So because of my ego, I'll just assume it's everybody. So there you go. Eat shit. Everybody thinks, you know, cycling in the early 90s, early mid 90s, 80s, like, so much more romantic or whatever. And then, you know, you have these pictures of, like, a Pascal Richard and Bartoli, and, you know, and they had, like, these kits, you know, like Casino and Asics and Mapai and Gavis and, you know, Batik. You remember when Batik, like, Del Monte sponsored a team for a while, and they had, like, Blue Dress. Like, how fucking cool is that? That was so, so cool. You know, like, I'm trying to think, like, why was that era more romantic, you know? Like, was it because it was, like, less money, or it was the kits were louder? You know, like, how, like, almost garish the kits were. They were almost comic-y. And I think it was a lack of information, you know? Like, you had to go, in the States, you know, you had to go to that bike shop that had bicycling magazine. And you flip through it just for, like, those odd photos of, like, Miguel Indurain riding up a mountain pass with, you know, 3,000 gram aluminum deep dish Shamal wheels. Like, how, and you just saw these deep dish wheels and you thought that was just the coolest thing that ever existed. And then every once in a while you'd get really lucky and you'd find like a cycling weekly or a cycle sport. Like those were harder to get, but you'd do some, you know, you really had to hoof it for that. And I think the lack of information kept these people like iconic in a way, you know, like they kept them, I think godlike's obviously a bit far, but I think it kept like, I think it kept them like it didn't make them human. They weren't human. They were something else. And it's different now, you know, like when you could just basically, you know, with Twitter you could basically send somebody a text message. You could send fucking like I could send, you know, like Mick Jagger a text message essentially. Like, and there's no reason I should be able to do that. And you see these people like, you know, you get more and more information about them and you see them have these flaws. And maybe that's horrible, you know? Like, maybe in a way, like, the lack of information is the best thing, you know? Like, I may have told the story before on the podcast, but there's, like, this story about James Brown, and, like, I think it was James Brown. This could be the racist in me. James Brown, whenever he played Vegas, like, he would never go down to the casino floor. He would just hang up. He'd hang out, and his whole crew would go down and just smash it on the casino floor, but he never would. And they asked him why, and he's like, man, the second I go down there, I stop being James Brown. Like, there's no way you can live up to the image. It's much like, you know, I don't think you should ever meet your heroes. I've been in these situations with certain people that I really look up to, and they're right there, you know, like, whether it's, like, some celebrity crush or something. Like, I remember there was this female comedian that I had like this, to this day I still have a really big crush on, and Pat McCarty and I went out to a comedy club late at night in LA, and she was right there. She was like 3 feet away from me, and like I even saw her like look at me, and she didn't look all that disgusted at my sight. Like, she, I'm not saying she approved, but she didn't vomit. So I mean, that's your thing, right? That's your chance. And then I know she drinks whiskey. I know entirely too much about this woman, by the way. Anyway, I had a chance to talk to her. Didn't. And don't really necessarily regret it. Actually, I don't regret it at all. I don't necessarily regret it. Let's go with the first one. I don't necessarily regret it because I think on a long enough timeline, you've built people up like way too much, right? You built them up too much to like they'll never satisfy. They'll never satisfy. So take that back around, get them a Twitter account, they start tweeting like stupid shit, and you're just kinda like after a while you just become deflated. Just like, oh. Maybe like cycling should just be like North Korea, like just a real lack of information coming out of it. Like as soon as you sign a UCI contract, you're not allowed to tweet. Just like only two journalists allowed at a race, maybe like two or three cycling websites, one cycling magazine, and each major language gets one cycling magazine. I think that would like counterintuitively like make, well, it would not grow the sport, it would probably kill the sport. It would make those who loved the sport more interested and work a little harder. I don't know what that would accomplish in this screwy scenario I set up. I'm imagining nothing, and let's just go with nothing. Let's do that. Wow, Mike, you're on a tear this morning. This morning, it's 1:20 in the afternoon. Before I go to some Twitter questions, I also have question for you guys. Cyclocross. You know, I bust balls with Powers and Trebonne, Tim Johnson, all these guys about cyclocross, and I've always teased it. I really like it, but I've just been on this side of the fence of teasing it, so I can't really drop the character now. But I was wondering, with cyclocross, do you guys think, like, what if they ran cyclocross races in the motocross format? So, like, instead of, like, a one-hour men's race and, like, a 50-minute women's race or whatever exactly the numbers are, what if you, like, split it up into, like, a qualification, a semi, and a heat? And each race was about, like, 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, and you took, like, you know, the first 10 or 15. I think that would be pretty freaking interesting because... it has everything that people like, you know, like the start, you know, the whole shots and the tight racing before the races can really spread out. Like, I think it'd be really, I'm not saying like on a permanent basis, but like every year, you know, have three or four exhibition races like this and, you know, splash them with good cash so the pro guys would do it. I may have already brought this idea a couple times on the podcast, but I really think that I would watch that more. I'd really, and of course, you know, like the top guys are always going to complain about this format because the top never want to change. I mean, they've already mastered it. You know, like I don't expect a Sven Nys or Jeremy Powers or Tim Johnson to like just jump on board with it because like it sucks for them. It sucks for the athlete. You have more starts. Like you have to stay warm in between efforts. The races are more intense. You know, like it's a longer day out. Effectively, it's a more stressful day. That's for sure. You know, like, of course they're going to complain, but if you want to make cycling bigger and better, you know, like, have to go for it. Like, stage races, I don't think there should be 8-man teams. I think there should be 6-man teams. Like, if you have just 8-man teams, you effectively have, like, 2 or 3 guys who are just going to be dedicated to riding the front and, like, welding. We call it welding. I don't think it's a... I was going to explain the term welding to you. Like, you guys are smart people, guys and gals. But, you know, you can get the gist of what welding is. You know, you just have 2 or 3 welders in the race where shit goes wrong, you know, and they weld it all back together. I mean, yeah, I mean, how much more interesting would that be? I think you could let more teams into races. You could let more teams into the Tour de France, probably, or in the Tour of California. Maybe the overhead for a cycling team would be a little less. Again, the athletes are going to complain because... You know, it's more stressful to make that tour spot, and a lot of guys make their bones off of making stage race teams and being welders. But, I mean, I think it would also distribute the stars around, you know, like a team like Sky or whoever, you know, like they can't just snatch up everybody with a big paycheck. They actually have to... a guy who's like the second or third, like a Greg Van Avermaet or whoever at BMC, he might look elsewhere if he keeps getting looked over. He might go somewhere else, take a little less cash just to get it, you know, to get a genuine shot at race wins. I don't know. I'm looking outside. It's a sunny day. Team sent me a nice road bike. I got Shane Klein's spare bike, so I'm gonna bust that out later. No power meter these days, folks. Loving the no power meter. Loving it. I think everybody should take the power meter off for a little while at least. That being said, if anybody wants to buy a power meter, they should get a hold of me. I think everybody should take the power meter off, and except if you run 172 cranks and you like FSA SRMs. Then, wink! Give me a message. Go back to the future of the sport. But if we're really about the future of the sport, like if we really want to grow it, like that's genuinely what you want. Not like, because oftentimes when people say like what's good for something, it's also what's best for them, right? So you can never really trust somebody when it's like, oh, this is for the good of the sport. Because what they might actually mean is like what they want or what's best for them. So if we're really trying to grow the sport, and we don't care about history or tradition or anything like this, we want to go full bore, don't you think we should just, like, go into, like, masters racing or age groupers, like, make it more participatory, like the Grand Fondo and, like... Because, I mean, the masters racers are the guys with the money. They're the ones with the time. You know, like, You see the team in Southern California, the MRI team, like they, I think they're actually making like a fairly profitable business model off of it. I mean, it's really kind of impressive. I mean, I'm saying that purely off a hunch, but I see the amount of ad space that they use and all the equipment they have and the club size that they're building out. Like, maybe we make this a participatory thing. Like, if I was a race director, if I'm starting a race, I might not really care about the pros. You know, the pros are going to come in, they're going to complain the most. They want the most prize money. They require the most overhead. And do Masters racers ever come out because pros are there? You guys tell me. I couldn't imagine on this side of the fence. They're like, well, there's a choice between this course and this course. This course is cooler, but, you know, Smart Stop, Jameson, Optum will be at this race. So, like, I'm going to go to this race just to see these guys that maybe will get coverage on Cycling News or Velo News. Like, I don't know. I think I'd rather go to whoever has the best course. If I was a race director, I might just go for course and prize money. You know, like lowest entry fees or something. Like, maybe there should be like a... Yeah, I guess it's a question for race promoters. Anybody here a race promoter? Cross Vegas follows me. Big fans of Cross Vegas. They always help me out when I need help. You guys tell me. But like, if I was going to sponsor a team, maybe I would sponsor a Masters team. Buddy deals or something. Let me ask you a question. Do you guys buy bikes because of what pros are on? Like, I get like if a pro like Cervelo comes out or Willier or whoever comes out with like a new model frame and it happens to be under a pro and that pro happens to look good on the bike, then it helps maybe push you forward. But how do you guys choose to buy a bike, you know? I feel like I'm doing a podcast with the air. You know, like normally I would ask these questions and then somebody would just answer them for me. And I feel a bit neurotic answering them myself. 22 minutes here, Mike. You're doing pretty good for yourself, you freaking psychopath. Let's see. Let's get some Twitter questions going. All right. We did pretty good on the Twitter questions, actually. It's kind of weird, but... See, first one, Emily Griswold on Twitter. It's a spasmic spazzy or something like this. Yeah. Now, Emily, I've seen her on Twitter, you know, how you see people on Twitter. And then this year, she came out to the Chattanooga National Championships and teamed up. She really helped out the team, actually. She gave the team a lot of water. Like, we set up some, in quote, secret feed zones. I don't know if they were, like, necessarily legal. But there were feed zones where we, you know, we had people dedicated to the team in unusual spots and strategic spots to just constantly top off water. You know, of course, like, at Nationals, like, the race can be won in small details like that. And... I'm not really sure after my head was spinning after the race if I've ever thanked Emily personally, but I hope she knows. And the other Roxanne King came out, so I hope these ladies know how much they helped and how much they contributed to that day. That really, really probably one of the more crazy days of my life. So Emily asks, what's your favorite band? What color would you never put on a kit? And what's the dumbest thing you've done in a race? Favorite band? Well, I mean, Lou Reed, Velvet Underground's always good. And, I don't know, I mean, David Bowie's always Bowie. But as far as a band goes, if you want to go as a collective, yeah, I mean, I know it's kind of hipstery or whatever, but, I mean, I can't really go wrong with LCD Sound System. I bring it up a lot, but... LCD Sound System, they take a little getting used to, but when you're in, you're in. And there's a Netflix documentary about their last show, which is great. So watch that. What color would you never put on a kit? It seems that flesh color is not very popular, especially in women's cycling in the torso section. That got a little bit of play. This is where I go with my brain on that too now, is I think, like, wow, like, I would hate to be the team director of that team right now. I just think, like, oof, the poor emails that guy has to, the emails that poor guy has to get. And what's the dumbest thing you've done in a race? Started a few races I shouldn't have. Felt pretty dumb about that. Finished a few races I shouldn't have. Probably, there's a couple races that was the dumbest thing I've done. Let's just start them. During the race, I believe holding hands with Brad Huff and attacking at the same time. That's probably my highlight of the dumbest thing I've ever done in a race. And I will say this, though. It works. People won't chase you in general if you attack hand-in-hand with another man. Totally Fueled, at Totally Fueled, says, what's the capital of Somalia? And I say, I'm not doing your homework for you. Lenore asks, why were there only 13 run funders to the Smart Stop campaign? Why wasn't it as popular as the Women's Project? And is the reason it didn't go through, the reason we didn't increase the UCI status? Yeah, so the team did do an Indiegogo campaign to kind of test the waters to see if we could crowdfund to get to the Pro Conti status. I really wasn't a part of that, so I was hearing everything through the people who were running it. But it was just a general taste to see if what would happen if we did it. I don't think it was like an eggs all in one basket, and maybe it was a little rushed and ill-prepared. I'm not really sure, but it was what it was. The women's team, the Project X, I mean, that team, you know, they're the best women's team in the world. So they have more of a social media outreach. So I'm sure that they probably got more funders. I never checked in on their stuff. So I'm not sure if they accomplished what their goal was. I hope they did. I'd hate to see that team go away entirely. But yeah. Could you turn the intro into a trailer so it's easier to skip? From Chris Schultz, this intro is gonna kill you, Chris. You're gonna fucking hate this one, dude, because you were just skipping forward like a motherfucker. That was pretty funny, though. And then follow that up with, your ramblings are often the most entertaining part. I wish you would make, that's not really a question, though. I appreciate it, now. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Currently listening to part one of your podcast with Phil, I'm assuming Gaiman, about how about more ranting on blocking? Okay, so for those who don't know, blocking sometimes happens in these medalist races. With the Pro Tour teams, they come over and they decide they don't want to race anymore. And they spread across the road and they kind of effectively block the road. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. If you don't want to be blocked, don't have people get in front of you, etc. Do I think it's a little childish and heavy-handed? Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a bit brutal. But at the same time, you know, if you're at the front, you wouldn't be blocked. So, 6 one way, half dozen the other. I do think, though, if people want to race your bikes, you probably shouldn't intimidate them out of it. You should probably allow them, if you think that they're stupid for attacking at a certain point, then let them go and, you know, mind your fucking business. But, again, you, in this life, you only get treated how you allow people to treat you. So, just because a guy has a Pro Tour jersey on and he's yelling at you does not mean he's an authority figure of you. He could be giving good advice. He could be being a prick. It's up to you to decide what he's doing in that moment. So, yeah, that's it. You only get treated how you allow people to treat you. Here we go. We got Eric Hancock. The Gaiman podcast was awesome. Just play that one and a half speed and pretend you interviewed Cadell Evans. Oh, Cadell. Yeah, that guy's retired. Hey, you want to have some fun with Cadell. look at photos from him on MapEye, then look at photos of him now. What the hell happened to his body? That guy just got, like, tankier and tankier. I have a feeling now, like, if Cadell wanted to, like, he could probably, like, stand in a windstorm with a kite and not move. He just looks, like, rock solid now. And it's the bike fit nerd in me, you know, like, I noticed small things because I had so many problems with my back, but, like, you could see, like, his seat was always kind of, like, angled a little bit down, and then it looked like his seat height was getting shorter and shorter, so he's using more quad, more calf. It just seemed like he really built up a lot of muscle doing that. It was, maybe that's why towards the end he didn't go uphill as well. He was loading those muscles up a little too aggressively. It feels good at first when you lower your saddle and you rotate the seat down a little bit. You don't have as much weight on your sit bones. You can kind of move those. You rotate the hips forward. In the beginning, you know, you could spin quite easily, quite flush. But what you're not doing is you're not using any of the hamstring now, and you're not allowing, you know, your quads to flush out, and eventually, like, they're gonna fail on you. But wow, I don't even know where the fuck that came from. Let's keep going, shall we? Something says click undo. If that doesn't work, fuck it, dude. Let's go bowling. Dude, we might have to go bowling. Scott Zastro asks, what's the backstory to the Barclays San Francisco Grand Prix bike over the head salutes? What I like about Scott is that he said the whole... He made sure to still give Barclays props for sponsoring that. I think that's a pretty good investment for Barclays. They probably, when they sponsored that race, they didn't realize in 2014 that they'd still be getting plugs from it. So congratulations, Barclays. There's an open spot on this podcast if you want to sponsor it, alongside Cardo Cyclist and Laser Helmets, who I'm not even going to bother asking for money or equipment for this podcast, seeing how I fucked it up royally. The story behind that is I'm quite an angry fella. I used to be even angrier than I am now, and I knew I was getting released by Discovery. No ill will towards them for that move. I was sick the majority of the year, and it's top team in the world. You have a sick year, you're kind of a weird guy. There's not a whole lot of need to keep you, so they let me go. Saw that one coming a mile away. Really wasn't all that upset about their decision. The decision was there was another team that I really wanted to kind of like sign for. I had some guys in the team that were pushing for me, and this guy had talked to me like a crazy way, like so rude and crass, and like, and I mean, it was amazing. I took that really personally. So I saw this guy on the course, and he was sitting on a section of the course by himself, which was kind of actually, that's how I spotted him in that San Francisco Grand Prix, because the rest of the course was pretty lined. And I'm sitting in this chair in front of the team RV, just looking weird. And when I attacked and got off the front, I decided that I was going to ride off the front by myself, as see how many laps I could come by him and give him the finger every lap. And yeah, so I think I made it 5 or 6 laps. And just really wanted to make sure that another... that I just burned a bridge, apparently. This is what I want to do. Apparently, I was on a path to narrow my career as much as possible. Narrow options, eliminate friends, and make myself non-hireable. I think these are all pretty much the same things I'm saying. I'm just finding different ways to... This is from the Department of Redundancy Department. But, yeah. So, basically, I was just trying to fuck him off. And, I'm not sure if it worked. Never talked to him about it. Tim Zolgar says, what role do you see Evan Hoffman playing with your squad next year? Now, you know, I hope that I haven't connected with Evan all that much yet this year. plan on it in the next couple weeks. But I want this kid to win races. I want him to get back to Pro Conti and Pro Tour status. This kid's a winner. And you know, you go to a team like Astana where you kind of get lost in the fold. You know, like, it's a big team. They got the Tour de France champion. Maybe they felt a little obliged to having a token American. You know, like, there's a steep learning curve. You know, I don't remember Evan really being a national team kid. You know, he didn't go to Belgium and learn all these, the quacking and all these things. So he got thrown in the deep end pretty quick. And when you get thrown in the deep end like there, it's literally sink or swim. I know people will say that, but it's like, if you don't come out swinging and you have, you know, Gasparato and Nibali and, you know, these guys, like, there's no fucking reason to, like, race them. You know, like, it's just, it is what it is, you know, like, so, yeah, there you go. Like, it's hard. The problem is he has the talent to go to that level. He needs to come back for, like, maybe 1 year and just reset. And, like, I'm gonna work with him and really want to see him, oh boy, if he can win the national TT championships or a minor stage race in the States, and then, you know, help out a lot for, you know, when we have a dedicated climbing day or dedicated sprint day. Like this guy, I was talking earlier about the podcast about welders. If you want to talk about a welder, this boy could weld 2-ton iron sheets together. I mean, I get this guy in the front, put him on the front with the Bobby Sweeney or Chris Dahl or 90% of my team. If I put Evan Hoffman and Eric Marcotte on the front, do you want to know how much time those guys could make up? Fuck, that break better be to the moon before my guys get on the front. Because those two guys alone will have a silverback contest, and I would be afraid to be in the pack on a bad day. Those two guys. So that's the role I see them. Does Danny Pate return your calls? Can he do the podcast? I don't call Pate much anymore. And I have brought up the podcast to him. Not interested. Is what it is. Jack John Page wants to know if I can learn to love him. You know, Jack, you seem needy, and I'm needy, and I just feel like we would have a needy contest, and I'm not sure how it would work, so. Why won't Tim Johnson return your calls? There's a lot of people wondering if I get my phone calls returned. What the fuck is this? Tiz Lavold. Wants to know why Tim Johnson won't return my phone calls. Do I have an STD if I do podcast with Big Tex? Say one of those does happen, and maybe yes to both, I guess. I mean, is that, yeah, yes to both, yeah, sure. Kwamba Fu wants to know, should he fake my orgasms? It's not a bad idea. I'm gonna tell you this, sometimes it's better. You don't become the animal that you become sometimes sometimes who you are before that moment is actually better as a better person than who you are after that moment. So for your sake, for your own incessant need to love yourself, to be constantly surprised and in love with yourself, so then you can let somebody else love you. You'd be like, does that make sense? Like, you don't want to hate yourself and then have somebody love you, because then you're going to look at them and think like, well, why do you love me? You're a crazy person. So to keep that self-interest and that self-love going, yeah, maybe you should fake them, bro. I just assumed you were a bro. I think most of these people are bros. Ink Otter wants to know, if you go back in time and be a part with any team, what would it be? And what one race would you ride? That's a good one. Obviously, the Tour de France would be a pretty go-to, right? I think the Olympics would be pretty sweet. if I could go back in time, it'd be a team that I was already on. I was when I was on Tia Cref, that was something special, and I was it was a first year that I really kind of lost the plot with my back and my brain, and I didn't know how to really like be friendly or likable, and I took out other people's success as like a slight against me. So if I could go back, I would relive that year and be, because that was such a magical year for that team going into Garmin, you know, like that was I have a feeling like it was much the same energy that this team was this year, you know, or SmartStop, I'm meaning. So, yeah, the year that Tia Cref switched to Smart to Garmin, that year, I would have liked to have been a better person, been in a better place, and be a part of that team. I think I would have gotten a lot out of it. Jeff Coutts. Have you mapped out a career path at this point? Is a DS at a World Tour team next logical step? I don't know if it works like that. I don't think that you do good at being a D3 director and then like you get called up the same way Rodgers do. I don't think it works like that. I think it's a good old boy system where everybody hires their friends. Problem is, I don't have any friends over there. So, my next career step, you know, man, I'm just gonna do this. This is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. SmartStop, the owners, Jamie, Joe, Pat, they all have implicit faith in me, and there's nowhere else I want to be. Rob Britton, Zach Bell, Marcotte, McCabe, Julian, Flavio, Huffman, Sweeney, Shane Klein especially. These are all guys that I actually care about. Like, I actually really... I spend time thinking about, you know, like perhaps more time than I spend thinking about myself, which I say perhaps, maybe not, but it's close anyway. And I have a vested interest in them. And I think until I have the team, a full turnover in the team where I have no original members left, I'm always going to have that. So I want to see all these guys have good success, and I want to see these guys make money and not make the same mistakes I did, you know? And like a guy like Zach, you know, like if it wasn't for a guy like Zach and Shane, really the whole team, but if it wasn't for these guys implicitly, like I don't know. Like these guys have, I tell these guys a lot, like when we have these meetings, sometimes when I don't think it'd get any better, I'll tell them, you know, like, if it wasn't for this job, if it wasn't for this year, I was going to be on my way out with cycling. I was going to be very, very bitter towards cycling. And I think that was a shame considering how much time I had put into it to walk away so bitter and so angry. And these guys, you know, these men, they turned that around for me. They've changed. They've essentially saved 15 years of my life. From making it bitter and angry and spiteful, and to like, I'm now in love with cycling again, and I owe that to these guys. So, yeah. So I'm not just gonna go ahead and bounce on that. Kwamba Foos is getting crazy now. You're asking all kinds of questions now, bro. I'm one question per podcast, buddy. What's the most unexpected thing about being a DS, good and bad? I think I just kind of mentioned it. Like, I didn't think that I was going to fall in love with cycling again, and I did. That's from Drewski. Yeah, that's the most unexpected thing. Man, Kwamba Foo, you are crazy. Why are so many smelly hippies in the cycling? What's all the fuss about women cycling, a bunch of misdirected feminism? I'm not sure what that means. I'll say this. I'll say this about the women's cycling is I think that would be the next step for me. I think I would really like to do good in men's cycling on the national circuit. And if I can't make it to World Tour, I would like to go to a women's team. And yeah, I'd like to work with a women's team eventually, just for no other reason but to just try something different. And yeah, I think I. I think there's a big gap in women's cycling that with, you know, strong directors, not, you know, riders, boyfriends, or professional directors. I mean, there's obviously some, right? But, like, to go in and obviously there'd be less money and less, there's more bootstraps and I'd really enjoy that. So I would enjoy that ground up feel, much in the same way that Smart Stuff this year. I'd enjoy that, and I think that would be the next step for me if in 3 or 4 years time we have a complete turnover from the team, there's no world tour options. Yeah, that's where I'll go. A lot of these questions I guess I've already answered. What are your thoughts and goals for next year? Kind of answered that. Who's the whiniest person in the peloton, and why should they just shut the hell up? It could be me, man. That might be me. The whiniest person. My good friend Jonas, he does whine a little bit, but he's my good friend, so I'll let him go. Rob Britton on the team, he whines in a comical way, so we let that one go. Freddy Rodriguez seems to point out a lot of things. I don't know. Let's see what we got. Finally, last question before I start this abridged podcast. What's up with your love for bulldogs? Why don't other dogs make the cut? That's from Sandy Berger. Sandy, I think she has a baby due here pretty soon. I know way too much about, way too intimate with my Twitter followers, obviously. Why, I mean, I feel like even asking why the love for bulldogs means that you don't spend enough time Google imaging bulldogs. So, that's what I have for you, Sandy. I know you have a bun in the oven, but I think that child's probably going to need something to play with, and that's probably going to be an English bulldog. So, why don't you go do yourself a favor and Google image that and find the nearest reputable breeder and go that way. Well, I think that's about it, folks. We covered everything. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day outside. I'm going to go ride my bike for a little bit. I'm going to go plan next year. Next week on the podcast, Chris Carmichael, old interview, about probably February or March of this year, held on to it for a little bit, gonna crack that bad boy out. It'll be a very surprising interview, I think. I think you guys, not what you guys are expecting. I was really, really happy that we did that one. So, I feel like I should leave you with something like really profound, like a statement. I feel like we opened up here, you know. But I don't have much. I don't have much. Hope everybody's good. Be good. And sorry for losing the Kiel Renan podcast, but here's what I have, and love you guys. Bye.
Maybe you just get fucking... Maybe you're just stressed about something.
Oh, what? Me? Stressed out?
Will, you're on the Run of Fez show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What up?
That guy called in a little while ago, said he was a cardiologist. He said if your blood pressure goes over 163, over 90,
yeah,
your heart would explode.
Right.
He's full of shit. I'm a truck driver.
See?
And I have to take physicals every year. And many a time, my blood pressure goes 200 over 100.
Whoa, see?
That's right, baby. That's I'll be there good. Soon. And don't you worry. I'll see you there.
Fez, let me tell you something, if you can hear me. I had bypass surgery about 7 years ago.
No.
I had triple bypass. And I do what I want, when I want, and how I want.
I love this guy.
Posters, I eat steak. I eat everything bad. I smoke like a damn chimney. But you know what? I enjoy my life.
You sound like
just
it.
Sitting around eating fish all the time is bullshit.
Yeah, that's true.
Fish is good.
Fucking fish eaters.
Fish can be good.
Have
you get it out
me.
Of a shell.
I like
you gotta work
I like
for
seafood
it.
And all that. It's great fish and all that. Shell. but I don't live my life because I might die in the next 5 minutes.
That's
you know?
True.
You got to get out there and enjoy it. Shit,
all right.
You know?
I like your attitude.
Hell yeah.
You ought to get your own. With 200 over 100, you may.
It's going by right now.
You might want to get your own calendar. Like, every day I'll just have, like, a fun thing written on it that people can.
I'd fucking buy it.
Fuck you. I had a bypass, and I was eating steak during it. Steak and lobster.
Smoking like a chimney. Fuck it.
Enjoy my heart right now is on the outside of my body, and I don't give two fucks about it.
I put smokes out on it. It's basically an ashtray. It's attached to me.
I drank out of a human skull. So fuck it.
That's all I do, Daddy.
I'm driving a 19-wheeler. That's how I fucking roll.
That guy's the best.
Yeah, he is. I cut my wrist this morning. I don't give a shit. I'm just fucking having fun.
I'm playing Russian roulette right now with just myself as I talk to you.
Yesterday, I smoked crack with a baby. Just me and a baby. Passing that glass dick back and forth, fucking taking big hits off of it.
I'm about to jerk this wheel right now and fuck this highway up. What do I care?
I forgot to tell you, I'm driving an airplane upside down. Wind is open. Last six times that shit was in my pants and I still haven't changed myself. I don't give two fucks. I'm a certified rapist. All right? You gotta live every moment for the. I don't have any kidneys.
I'll perform abortions in the cab of this fucking thing. That's right.
Unwanted abortions. That's how I roll. You gotta live every moment.
Carpe diem, motherfucker.
I fucking carpe diem them all the time.
Can't stop, won't stop. That guy is like Tony Robbins.
I got a pet panther that I sleep with. Don't fucking tell me about shit. My underwear is made out of cupcakes.
Impressive.
I love that angle. You gotta keep them separated.
Separated.
Hey! The man you disrespect to me. Drink them all.
You gotta keep them separated.
Hey, hey! Don't pick up my girl under 18. It won't be too many times. Hey, hey! Come out and play!
Separated.
Hey! Man, you're talking back to me. Drink them out.
You gotta keep them separated.
Yeah.
separated.
I'm like kind of surprised that House even has a car. It kind of seems like the kind of guy who would just...
Well, it's been here for 10 days, so...
Yeah, so he effectively doesn't have a car. So if you've only been here since Tuesday, where did your trip... Because how long ago was the world?
Sunday.
Was it only Sunday?
Yeah, it's been a week and 2 days. Yeah.
Did you go...
Like straight into a flu. In fact, I think actually I was getting sick.
During that whole week?
Yeah.
How did the world end up going?
Not as good as if I'd felt healthy, I think.
No, yeah.
No, I was all right. I had okay legs, not my best, not my worst. And
that's kind of probably pretty... Even at the World Championships, you have, like, okay legs. It's not a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't work. but... And my job was kind of in the middle of the race. Like, it was the intention was never to have me there at the finish. So
I think, who was the director?
Sayers and Jim was helping too.
What was your job? Just
cover stuff in the middle of the race, which in retrospect was I could have done more interesting things maybe with. Well, how do I word that? It ended up being a kind of boring race. Like, Poland's tempo was so hard that there was nothing in the middle of the race. So not that I could have done something somewhere else, because nobody did anything anywhere else. But I would have liked to have awarded that way. I wish that there had been some attacks that I could have followed in the middle of the race, because there just were.
Yeah, and you felt okay at that point.
Yeah, at that point it was all good. But it was Poland's tempo was unreal, man. And they kept all their guys. Like, no one was cracking. It was incredible. But... I think everyone after the race would have called them idiots if Kwiatkowski hadn't won.
But yeah, he did.
So we're the idiots.
Oh no, he did the Babe Ruth called that one.
Yeah.
But I mean, is we like a satisfying end to like a pretty
season? It was awesome. I mean, just representing the U.S. is
It's
so cool. I mean,
was it your first time in Pro Worlds?
Yeah, first time any Worlds.
Really?
I've never gone to Worlds before, and then, like, stitched in the back of the shorts, it said, you were representing the United States of America. I thought that was rad.
Yeah.
That was really cool. And I got to be roommates with Howes, which is something...
Probably, like, the two most patriotic guys.
Yeah. It was, we had a good time. I have actually... Jordan bought me a book. I brought it with 500 trivia facts about... the United States or something like that. So we were just studying up on, you know, all the facts, like, surrounding America's independence and...
Really?
Yeah, it was awesome.
I was going to wonder if it was, like, written, like, super left-wing, like, maybe just taking this shit out of
the... No, it was
top
all, 50 like...
facts, like, how many drone strikes have we committed?
It was, I mean, some of them were, like... way out there. There's no way anyone would ever know that without, like, researching specifically that.
Really?
But yeah, it was kind of fun. I don't know. I like racing for the States. It's cool.
Yeah. I remember when I was, like, a junior and, like, going over as a national team and stuff, like, for me, like, it had, like, so much American pride, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because you could kind of tell how the other nations, like, felt about you.
Mm-hmm.
Perceived,
especially then. Like, especially then.
Yeah, like, that. My thing was, like, is I wanted to beat, like, of course you want to win the race, but at the minimum, like, I wanted to beat, like, at least two guys from every country.
Right, right.
So, like, I knew that I could make the national team on any team.
Right, sure.
Like, it was so important to me, like, to make sure to beat, like, at least two or three times.
I was kind of the opposite. When I first went over, I was like, I'm going to just assimilate, I'm going to become, you know, a Euro, I'm going to buy the, like, stupid acid wash jeans that are three sizes too small.
Sure, some diesel jeans, you need some diesel.
Start, like, throwing gel in my hair like it's going out of style.
Hey, easy with the gel in the hair.
As you can tell, I try pretty hard myself. These are my nice jeans here.
Yeah, right.
They're vintage.
When did you finally just kind of realize it wasn't for you?
So I went over and I didn't fit in, and then I was like, oh, this is bullshit. This isn't working. And so then and there, like, I kind of decided, all right, maybe this is not what
I'm gonna own this.
Yeah, and then every year since, it's like it's gotten stronger. My like it went from, like, you know, okay, I like America, to patriotism, to like borderline like jingoistic behavior, and you know, I mean, you know, you don't want to be a xenophobe, but
right.
I'm definitely into America.
Definitely into it. No, it's something empowering where you're just like, nah, I'm not gonna, this thing that you want me to apologize for, I'm just, actually, I'm gonna go the other way around.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. My thing was always when I was over there, like, when I was in Europe, you know, it was during the Bush era, so you had, like, a lot of, like, anti-American sentiment.
Yeah, a lot of naysayers.
From different, so my trick was that I would read up on all the bad things other countries had done. So, like, and you had the book, you know,
right.
of like, what the Belgians and the Dutch and right. the French and the Spanish had done to other, like, in, you know, people, like, indigenous or other countries or Africans or whatever, right? Like, what they had done there and then,
yeah.
and their acts of imperialism.
Yeah.
So then any time that was, like, they would bring up Bush, I could also bring up, like, something that was happening there.
Right.
Just to kind of, like...
Keep it on even keel.
Yeah, I mean... It was maybe never quite on par. Maybe Bush outdid everybody, but it was still like, hey, just so you know, if you're running a country, you're gonna like fuck some people over. Like it's just kind of
it's part of the course.
It's how it happens.
Especially when you have a big country.
Yeah.
I don't know. I am not saying America's perfect, but the more I travel, the more I'm sure that we do it a lot better than a lot of folks.
Well, I think, like, the brilliant and the bad part about traveling is, like, the brilliant part is, like, there's so many things that you get to experience and see and that you just love in other countries, right? Like,
yeah.
you love, like, you go to Italy and you're like, man, the food is so good and the lifestyle is relaxed and they, like, they do this and that's great. And you go to Spain and there's, like, stuff like that. Like, everything, you know, yeah. like, everything has a little bit, you
yeah.
know? And, like,
oh, yeah.
like, nobody has it 100% yeah. dialed. But then there is, like, this thing of, like... All right, well, life is easier in the States. Like, yeah. life is relaxing and...
It's straightforward. It's you know what it is for me? I'm productive here.
Yeah.
I can do stuff. There, I yeah. feel so... It's like my life's on hold. I feel useless.
Yeah,
you know, like... we busted... Alex and I had those little, you know... It was the fad, you know, the air compressor leg things.
Sure.
I don't know if they do anything.
Sure.
I think they're still in a closet somewhere. Anyway, we blew the fuse on it. No problem, right? You take the thing apart, you go to the hardware store, you get a fuse. That took us like 2 weeks in Spain.
Yeah.
It was the hardest thing I ever did.
No, when I was in Lucca, it was going to the hardware store, going to the grocery store, doing something like... It was like a major accomplishment.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I found a place that has it in stock, ready. Like, America has made it very efficient to take your money off of you.
Yes.
You know, like... You need, you have money, we have your thing, yeah. whatever it is. And it is like, okay, it's easy to spend
money.
You
can have it now.
Yeah.
Instant gratification.
So it's like, yes, you can spend money quicker here, but you do get shit done if you need it to get done.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have a lot of patience. That's actually one of the things this remodel has been good for, is you have to be patient.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're screwed up, and you end up going backwards anyway.
Yeah.
It's... And it's a lot of work, so you gotta... It's way better to do it right the first time, order the right stuff, and...
We were talking earlier, like, the housework and remodeling and gardening, all this stuff, like, how rewarding that feeling is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it is it's a different awesome. Reward structure. Like, when you could just sit back... It's like cycling. You, like... You go and you train really hard and you okay, maybe if you have a power meter, you have a kilojoule number or something, you have a power to weight number, but and you know, you can look in the mirror and you can see yourself getting skinnier, but there's not like this at the end of the day you can step back and look. You know, there's a reward system there.
And it's all a lot more fragile, right? So like let's say you do that all winter and you come in, you're fit as a fiddle and like ready to just crush it, first thing you do is crash.
Yeah, it's all gone.
All
Whereas if you rip up the carpet,
it's gone.
And you put up the carpet and then you put down hardwood floors, you look, and you're like, look at this. Yeah. I did this with my hands. Like, I manifested
and
this change.
It's going to be there for a lot of years. Look, there he is.
Is that the Hauser?
Yeah. Yeah, go get him, Mona. Go get him. I know. You're a good girl.
Alex House, the most anti-American person in the world, is the...
You get a haircut? You look good.
He looks amazing.
Mona.
Hey. Mona, we're doing a podcast.
Do a good job.
Oh, you're going to trick him.
No, he's just going to play outside with your dog.
Oh, yeah, he needs a ball, though.
You can break through a ball.
How's going to come inside?
He's calmer, dude. He's smarter than I am.
So the season, how was the season for you, buddy?
Yeah, good. It was actually, winter was the best winter ever. Trained my heart out. Came in fit as I've ever been. Lean, ready, rock and roll. And the first thing I did was crash.
Yeah.
So that was speaking
for me. What race was this?
Guitar.